Loose ball. Ewing goes up. The basket counts.
He gets it over to the doctor. Tie ball game. Here's a shot. Julius.
He scores!
He scores!
Anthony for three.
Bang! That one goes down and the game is tied.
Here's Durant moving on Tucker. He turns. He shoots. Yes!
Talking Knicks, Nets, and all things across the association, this is Pick and Pod on WFUV Sports.
Hello and welcome to Pick and Pod. My name is Mary Hannah Gallagher. Joining me today is Bradley Byrne, Ethan Walks, and Max Langer. How is everybody today? I hope we're doing well after such an exciting week of basketball. How are we doing?
I'm doing great. I was obviously hate watching OKC yesterday and hate watch succeeded. And obviously we'll get into that later in the episode, but I'm feeling great. I watched the game last night with my family and this was the best possible outcome as a Knicks fan, but obviously we'll get into that later.
Yeah, I'm living on the edge right now. Knicks are looking great. I mean, first time in 27 years, first time in my lifetime. So I'm on cloud nine right now. But other than sports, I mean, I'm doing all good. Got some trips going, so excited.
Awesome. Sure. How are you, Matt?
For me, it's definitely going good. As a LeBron James fan, this is like the first finals in like 15 years where I'm actually going to be able to watch it, not from a perspective of rooting for anybody, because I'll be totally fine if either of the Knicks or if the Spurs win. So it's going to be a great chance to just watch some basketball and not stress too much about the results.
Yeah, no, that's valid. Not being really stressed about how a finals goes must be a really good feeling. I'm a Celtics fan, so of course it's anyone but New York for me in these finals, but I do think they deserve to be headed to the finals. Let's just start there with the Eastern Conference Finals. So the Knicks totally blew the Cavs in a 4-0 sweep. The Knicks enter the finals now with a plus 271 point differential across all 14 of their playoff games, making it the highest scoring margin by any team entering the finals in NBA history. That in itself is such dominance. It pains me to acknowledge how dominant that is, but you have to give the Knicks their flowers here. I'd love to hear what you guys are thinking going into this round of finals, especially since we're a New York-based radio, kind of maybe excitement about being able to come from this perspective.
No, definitely. And obviously with the Knicks being a New York, you know, team and WFUV being able to send people to the finals for the first time, you know, of this, you know, century, because obviously the Nets haven't been to the finals in a while and the Knicks haven't been there since 99. So it's a great opportunity. And obviously I think in terms of ratings and narratives, I think Knicks Spurs is, I think out of all the playoff teams, you could argue it's the best in terms of narrative base. We have the Knicks who are trying to end one of the three longest title droughts in NBA history with Wembanyama, who wants to be the face of the NBA and start his reign over the NBA. So I think it's great for the NBA that there'll be a new champion, because obviously back-to-backs are good, but I think seeing a new champion every year benefits the NBA more.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with those points. I will say this. I feel like their path might have been, they say, is easy, but honestly, I think when they were down 2-1 to Atlanta, I thought that sort of poked the bear, so to speak. And ever since then, I mean, you're on an 11-game playoff winning streak. They look unbeatable. And they're just flat-out embarrassing opponents, I feel like. Ever since Game one, I mean, they've pretty much dominated the Cleveland series, Sixers that kind of knew that they were probably going to win. I thought it was going to be a tighter series than it was from an unbiased standpoint. But honestly, I think the Spurs can be a much tougher opponent, obviously, because they made it to the finals. But I feel like they've been through the ringer before. They've made Eastern Conference Finals. They haven't made NBA Finals, but neither team has that experience. So it'll be a tall test for them. I'm excited. I feel like a sweep might be a long shot, but the way they're playing, I mean, I can't rule them out. And I can't believe that they're, I understand that they're not, that they shouldn't be favored, I feel like, but I think in a way that they should, just based on the pure dominance that they're rolling through opponents.
Yeah, 100%. I think everything that you just said is so really obvious and touching into something that I wanted to talk about with back-to-back sweeps with Philly and then Cleveland. That you can't deny the way that that energy of this team has going into these finals games, how they've now rested. Max, I'd love to hear what you're thinking about the Knicks team going into this week.
Yeah, I mean, I think Bradley, you made some really great points about just the storylines revolving around the finals in general. Of course, you know, it feels like the Knicks haven't lost a game since like the Reagan administration or something like that. I mean, they just can't lose. I mean, at least from my perspective, to be honest, I still feel like in the series the Knicks have to prove it to me. Like the teams they played just are not and were not that good. The Hawks weren't good. The Sixers that weren't good, and the Cavs, I mean, after you blow a 22-point lead in the fourth quarter, like we all knew they weren't going to win that series. Like, I mean, come on, you don't win a series after blowing that type of lead. I mean, I think the Thunder are better than any team the Knicks faced. I quite honestly, I think the Lakers, even without Luka, were probably up there with what the Cavs did and what the Sixers did. Obviously, the strength of the Knicks this year that has kind of differentiated them from their previous playoff runs has been their depth, right? And the fact that Mike Brown can go to the bench and he doesn't have to play seven guys, he can play 11 guys. And against the Spurs, some of that advantage I feel like is almost negated in a sense because the Spurs can do that too. They have the guards, they have the wing play. Of course, they've got, you know, Wembanyama at the big, and you know. You saw what he did against Oklahoma City. He's just going to be even hungrier to do that against the Knicks and in the Garden. I guess funny thing is that these are the two teams in the NBA Cup. So I guess the NBA Cup actually is telling on what will happen in the finals or not. But I no, I think it's going to be a good series. My original thinking is probably like Spurs and six, just because the Knicks still have something to prove to me. They really do. I just don't think they've had a quality playoff win, even though they haven't lost in 6 weeks. I just feel like you're running into almost like a buzzsaw in the Spurs here.
Come on,
Yeah,
Langer.
I
Come
think
on,
that
Langer. Why you gotta do that to me?
one thing you have
Hey,
to
I'm not gonna
understand.
tell you how to fan. You should root for whoever you want to be. I'm just trying to be objective
Knicks in
here.
four, until proven otherwise.
No,
Well,
I
that'll
will
happen
say.
on June 3rd, game one.
No, I think you had a lot of really good points. I think it's such a fact right now that the Western Conference is so much harder to get through than the Eastern Conference. I mean, what you were saying about how OKC and the Spurs are just some of, like, that was some of the best basketball that I have watched with two teams that truly were working their hardest to get through into the finals. And it was so fun to watch that. And also, you touched on what Bradley was talking about in how those storylines are just going to be so exciting to watch with New York, New York, and somebody that's trying to really rise up and take the NBA for himself with Wemby. Speaking of Wemby, I think maybe we should kind of blend into talking about how the Western Conference Finals went. So last night, the San Antonio Spurs took the win in Game 7 from Oklahoma City Thunder. This was just such a gritty game to really watch. It came down to the final seconds. I'd love to hear maybe the experiences that some of you guys had watching this. I know I was standing up for most of the game, kind of walking around, not because I wanted anybody to win, but just because it was so fun to watch that basketball go up and down the court. So I'd love to hear kind of about how everybody's series went with this.
So yesterday kind of reminded me how stressful it is to watch NBA games because obviously the Knicks really haven't played a close game in about a month. So yesterday kind of reminded me that NBA games can be stressful even when your team's out playing. And the moment I saw OKC go down by six with under a minute left, I kind of knew the game was over. And I don't know if I was more happy to see OKC lose or the Knicks actually make the finals. Because in my opinion, I've talked about this on other podcast episodes, I think SGA might be the worst MVP, arguably in NBA history. I hate the way he plays. I just don't like his brand of basketball. And obviously, with the whole narrative of OKC being favored by the refs, and I always like to see the reigning champ kind of go down. I always like to see a new champion. I don't like to see teams go back to back. I think it benefits the, as I talked about earlier, it benefits the NBA more to see a new champion. So to see OKC, bite the dust, especially to a young San Antonio team, who the only player on San Antonio that has playoff experience is De'Aaron Fox. So to see kind of, I feel like the Spurs, I think, will eventually kind of collapse in the finals because they don't have experience. But sometimes it goes to show that no matter how much experience you have, it really doesn't matter at the end of the day because the Spurs were the better team. And even though the Spurs probably should have won earlier just because no J-Dub and no AJ Mitchell, I got to give props to the Spurs.
Yeah, no doubt. It was a exhilarating series. Turn back to game one. I mean, that double overtime thriller. But I feel like Wemby had his moment, and when the lights were the brightest, he came up with with the goods. And honestly, beating a team like the Thunder twice when you were down 3-2 is something people will say injuries for the Thunder, and I understand that, but they didn't have AJ Mitchell for majority of the playoffs, and J-Dub was out for a good chunk of time, but it just flat out the better team won. From the standpoint in that series, I just felt like Wemby and the Spurs just were level-headed, went on the road in a hostile environment, probably the most hostile environment other than MSG, of course. They just stepped it up, and when it was time, they came up and delivered. And that's all you can ask for if you're the Spurs.
Yeah. You love to watch kind of just those dynamics happen in the Western Conference. And I loved kind of being able to watch the building of Wemby. I remember when Wemby got drafted, and he was just, you kind of saw this future of greatness for him coming. And it's fun to watch this unfold. I mean, at least for me, I guess this is the first time I've really been old enough to watch somebody get drafted and then follow them along their career. And so I'm really excited to keep watching that happen and to see him reaching this finals. Wemby actually, at only 22 years old, he has joined LeBron James as one of the only players to make the All-NBA first team and reach the finals in the same season. So it's kind of fun to kind of contrast that stat, see the two next to each other. But Max, given you mentioned your love for LeBron, I'd love to hear what you're thinking.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, like, at least touching on the LeBron point, like, isn't it ridiculous to think about, especially now in the last, like, whatever it's been, 7 or 8 years where we've seen a different NBA champion every year, to think about that LeBron James made 8 straight NBA finals? Like, isn't that just absurd to think about? Like, SGA and this, like, all-time Thunder team haven't even made two in a row, and LeBron made 8 of them. And he did it on, like, Yeah, did it on two different teams, 4 years in Miami and 4 years in Cleveland. So that's just like mind-boggling to think about. I think the point, I think Bradley, you made the point about like how the NBA loves to see a new champion. And I think to some regard that can be good, but I also think some regard, at least touching on this Western Conference Finals a little bit, is that I think dominant teams, everybody wants to take out the champ, right? Everybody always finds a reason to discredit the champions. Like if you look at Major League Baseball, the reason everyone says the sport is broken is because of the Dodgers, and the Dodgers spend too much money. And you look at the NBA, and people find a way to discredit the Thunder because they say they don't play the right way, they get fouled, they have the refs on their side, which is always a common argument. People said the same thing about the Chiefs for many years, and that the Eagles had developed this cheap play where they just push the quarterback into the line of scrimmage and have 5 yards every time. It's unstoppable. So it's like a pattern throughout sports history that people will always find a way to, discredit the champ. Oh, Jannik Sinner, he was doing some unfaithful things in order to, get his way to all win all these grand slams. So there's always a way to discredit the champ. I do think when it comes to OKC, there was a little bit more of that though. Obviously, the calls we did see maybe were not close. And as a Lakers fan, right now I got to see it up close and personal. But I do think at least from this perspective, it's great for the NBA that Wembanyama is going to the finals. I think he already is the face of the NBA in a sense, at least until LeBron, Steph, and KD go. They'll always kind of be there. But Wemby, Luka, that whole like era of international players, including Shea, is kind of the new face of the league, and that kind of got cemented in the last couple of years.
No, definitely. And I think one thing that you touched upon was people finding a way to hate on the new champions. And I kind of agree with that. And that's what kind of stinks about, media and, social media today is that even though we should be celebrating when, teams win a championship, we're always finding ways to kind of like nitpick. Like, even as a Mets fan, like, as much as I dislike the Dodgers, I respect how they managed to win their championship because the whole point in the no salary cap in MLB is to spend as much money as possible. And the Dodgers, that's not the Dodgers' fault that, they managed to acquire, all these great players like Shohei Ohtani and Kyle Tucker and Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman. So the Dodgers, I have respect for the Dodgers because of the way they, they went according to the book. And unlike OKC, manipulating and constantly foul baiting and flopping and flailing to try and trick the referees into getting more calls, that's not, ethical or fair. So I think OKC hate is definitely justified, but like, for example, like Dodgers hate and even the Eagles hate, they're not doing anything that's bad or wrong. They're doing what the system allows them to do. So obviously, some hate is definitely justified, but it's kind of sad that, we're in a society where we find more ways to discredit teams and to celebrate teams,
Yeah, I would just say
Yeah.
one thing really quickly, like 20 seconds about the OKC thing is I can't get that upset at Oklahoma City when the refs are calling these fouls. Like, if you want to get upset and say the Thunder are like breaking the system, I mean, go ahead. But the refs are allowing them to do it. Like, can you blame the Thunder for flopping when the refs are calling it every time? Like, that's what any team should be doing if it's working. And it worked for them, of course, until last night.
Yeah, but I mean, also in cases like that, that is evidence kind of OKC abusing a system, and not that they're asking for these calls to be made, but they are doing kind of the specific things to make that happen. But I can't say that I'm for OKC hate. Of course, I am for maybe some Knicks hate. But can't bring too much of that into here now, can
Come on,
I?
Mary. I got no one on our side, Bradley.
Maybe. I mean, this is a New York station, so I don't think you can say no one's on your side. I think you have the entire state of New York and probably every celebrity on your side. But I think, kind of just to wrap this up, get into the mood, we should think about maybe our predictions for this final season. Bradley, we'll start with you.
So I'm going to go Knicks in six. I think that the Knicks aren't going to slow down. Obviously, they're not going to sweep. The Spurs are winning five, but statistically, OG Anunoby has been the best defender against Victor Wembanyama since Wemby's been in the league, and I think that will definitely impact the Spurs. And the Knicks, their forwards will be the X factor because the Spurs have a lot of small defensive guards that can't guard the Knicks' taller wings, and I think that will definitely play a role into it. And I also think one more thing before I wrap it up. I do think that we saw how emotional the Spurs were after beating OKC in seven. I think they're definitely going to come into the finals with a little bit of hangover because obviously the narrative around, oh, Wemby versus Shea and, Wemby taking his matchup against Chet personal and stuff like that. So I definitely think there will be some hangover on that end. But I think the Knicks will finally win their first championship for the first time since 1973 in six games in Madison Square Garden. That's my prediction.
Okay, Ethan.
Everyone knows where I'm going with this. I believe the Knicks will win the championship.
Don't say in four,
So
though.
I'm thinking about four, but I want to be respectful for all the Spurs fans. I'll go Knicks in six as well. No, I'm gonna go Knicks in five. Knicks in five. As much as I would like to see them clinch it at the Garden, I think Spurs are just too good to get swept. I mean, we're talking about a team that's won over 60 games, pure dominance. But at the end of the day, you know who runs this town? New York City and the New York Knicks. New York, stand up. Orange and blue skies.
Okay, yeah, Max, what are you thinking?
Okay. I guess, I guess when you look at the series from like every analytical factor out there, there's obviously San Antonio's got the home court. It's the first time I think, I could be wrong, in the playoffs that the Knicks won't have home court advantage. Obviously the Knicks are far more rested than the Spurs, and the Spurs or and the Knicks aren't coming off of this huge, like, emotionally tolling series as San Antonio is. I think the Knicks, like the way they've been shooting the ball, is just kind of bound for regression of sorts. It feels like, Mikal Bridges or one of their players, I think, hasn't missed a shot in like a year or something like that. Some graphic that they put up there on
Landry
ESPN.
Shamet, 11 of 12 from three.
Landry Shamet. Okay. They have like six guys on their team who haven't missed a shot since, like, I don't know, game three in Atlanta or something like that. So, yeah, I feel like the Knicks obviously are going to be bound for regression, and that comes with the Spurs having more depth and longer wing defenders. I think everything kind of lines the series up to go six or seven games. I'm going to go with San Antonio in six, but it wouldn't surprise me if it goes to a game seven.
Yeah, I feel really similarly. I think that we've touched on kind of our opinions on how the Eastern Conference is just less competitive, how the Knicks maybe were dominant, but were dominant in a way that I think the Spurs would have had that same dominance. So I think that taking kind of that comparison that the Knicks breeze through, so they're going to be such a big threat in the finals is something that you can't count on. And the Spurs have been actually fighting tooth and nail to get to these finals, going through a game seven against OKC. I think that the Spurs are way more fired up about this. And they're warm, they're ready, they have home court advantage. I think that I do think that this is going to be a pretty hard fought series. I think it's going to be Spurs and seven. I think that the Knicks aren't really ready for the backcourt kind of dual threat, like speed, but also defensive, like versatility, I guess, that the Spurs are going to come at them with. I think that they've gone against a lot of people in these Eastern finals that have maybe less of that. They have less of the dual action. They were good teams, of course, but they weren't ready to take on kind of the multitude of skills that the Knicks have. But I think that a team like the Spurs is going to be really well matched up with that. So that is what I am predicting. That just about does it for our episode, though. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Mary Hannah Gallagher. I was joined by Bradley Byrne, Ethan Wax, and Max Langer. Pick and Pod is a production of WFUV Sports.
Loose ball. Ewing goes up. The basket counts.
He gets it over to the doctor. Tie ball game. Here's a shot, Julius.
He scores!
Anthony for three. Bang! That one goes down, and the game is tied.
Here's Durant moving on Tucker. He turns, he shoots. Yes!
Talking Knicks, Nets, and all things across the association, this is Pick and Pod on WFUV Sports.